"Call me Ginger," she said.
"My name's Victor Tugelbend, but my friends call me Victor," said Victor.
"This is your first click, is it?"
"How can you tell?"
"You looked as though you were enjoying it."
"Well, it's better than working, isn't it?"
"You wait until you've been in it as long as I have," she said bitterly.
"How long's that?"
"Nearly since the start. 5 weeks."
"Gosh, it's all happened so fast."
"It's the best thing that's ever happened," said Ginger flatly.
"Well, I suppose so. Are we allowed to go and eat?" said Victor.
"No, they'll be shouting for us again any minute," said Ginger.
Victor nodded.
He had, on the whole, got through life quite happily by doing what he pleased in a firm yet easy-going sort of way, and he didn't see why he should stop that, even in Holywood.
"Then they'll have to shout," he said. "I want something to eat and a cool drink. Maybe I've just caught a bit too much sun."
Ginger looked uncertain. "Well, there's the commissary, but..."
"Good, you can show me the way."
"They fire people just like that."
"What, before the third reel?"
"They say there's plenty more people who are dying to break into the moving pictures, you see."
"Good, that means they'll have all afternoon to find two of them who look just like us."
He strolled past Murray, who was also trying to keep in the shade of a rock.
"If anyone wants us," he said, "we'll be having some lunch."
"What, right now?" said the troll.
"Yes," said Victor firmly, and strode on.
Behind him he could see Dibbler and Silverfish locked in heated discussion, with occasional interruptions from the handleman, who spoke in the leisurely tones of one who knows he's going to get paid $6 today regardless.
"We'll call it an epic. People will talk about it for ages."
"Yes, they'll say we went bankrupt."
"Look, I know where I can get some coloured woodcuts done at practically cost."
I was thinking maybe if I got some string and tied the moving picture box onto wheels so it could be moved around.
People will say, that Silverfish, there's a moving picture smith with the guts to give the people what they want, they'll say. A man to roll back the, what's-name of the medium.
Maybe if I was to make a sort of pole and swivel arrangement, we could bring the picture box right up close to the...
What, you think they'll say that?"
"Trust me, Tommy."
Well, all right. But no elephants. I want to make that absolutely clear. No elephants."
"Looks weird to me," said the Arch-Chancellor. "Looks like a bunch of pottery elephants. Thought you said it was a machine."
More of a device," said the Bursar uncertainly.
He gave it a prod. Several of the pottery elephants wobbled.
"Rictor the Tinkerer built it, I think. It was before my time."
It looked like a large ornate pot, almost as high as a man of large pot height. Around its rim, 8 pottery elephants hung from little bronze chains. One of them swung backwards and forwards at the Bursar's touch. The Arch-Chancellor peered down inside.
"It's all levers and bellows," he said distastefully.
The Bursar turned to the university housekeeper.
"Well now, Mrs. Whitlow," he said, "what exactly happened?"
Mrs. Whitlow, huge pink and becorseted, patted her ginger wig and nudged the tiny maid who was hovering beside her like a tugboat.
"Tell his lordship, Cassandra," she ordered.
Cassandra looked as though she was regretting the whole thing.
"Well, sir, please, sir, I was dusting, you see."
"She was her dusting,"
said Mrs. Whitlow helpfully. When Mrs. Whitlow was in the grip of acute class consciousness, she could create H's where nature never intended them to be.
"And then it started making a noise."
"It made a noise,"
said Mrs. Whitlow.
"So she come and told me, your lordship, has her per my instructions."
What kind of noise, Cassandra?"
said the Bursar, as kindly as he could.
"Please, sir, sort of..." She screwed up her eyes. "Oh, whum, 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 blip."
"Sir?"
"Plib,"
said the Bursar solemnly.
"Yes, sir."
"Her plib,"
echoed Mrs. Whitlow.
"And that was when it spat at me, sir,"
said Cassandra.